Thank you, Sam. Let me ask you to take a Bible and to open to Matthew chapter 5. We're going to spend some time in both of our lessons this morning in the text that Jeff read for us a few moments ago, Matthew chapter 5. And I would like us to zero in on one particular, it's actually the other PowerPoint that we need. Let's zero in on one particular verse, Matthew chapter 5 and verse 41. We'll have pulled up here in just a second. There we go. Notice the unusual wording here in verse 41. And whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. We as Christians are probably very familiar with this passage. We've heard it a number of years, but we may not really recognize kind of the unusual nature of this instruction. As we think about the entire context of this particular statement, I appreciate that Jeff started back up in verse 38 because that sets the context for this. And I'd like us to take a look at that as we look in verse 38 to begin with. It says, "You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person, but whoever slaps you on the right cheek, turn the other to him also." Also an unusual instruction here, but the idea seems to be that even in personal injury, the disciple of Christ is to be one that demonstrates an attitude of meekness, not aggressive responses, not one in which our rights, our concerns are our sole focus. Instead, there's to be this meek response, not a weak response, but a meek response even to mistreatment. Continuing on in verse 40, "If anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, let him have your cloak also. And whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away." Here we might put it that even in the when it comes to property loss, or when it comes to this kind of forced robbing of our time, if you will, or robbing of our energy, the disciple of Christ is to be one that has an attitude that demonstrates generosity towards others. Then let's continue verse 43. Notice, "You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven, for he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet your brethren only, what do you do more than the others? More than others, do not even the tax collectors do so? Therefore you shall be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect." In terms of what we might call personal liberties, those times in which we can choose what we want to do with our time, we can choose what we want to do with our actions, here we are to demonstrate an attitude and a spirit of kindness. And one of the overall kind of points that this section seems to bring out is that as disciples of Christ, there may be those times in which we need to be willing to forfeit personal rights and do so in order to advance the cause of Christ. That's the context of this statement that we began with in verse 41, where Jesus teaches that we are, if someone compels us to go 1 mile, to go two. But we might think a little bit about what it is that's unique about this instruction. You know, it's somewhat foreign to us because we live in an age in which there are limits upon government. Certainly there are times in which eminent domain or things such as that may forcefully take property for the good of the state or something like that. But that's a rather unusual kind of thing. I would submit to you that in the first century, this was a much different kind of situation. For example, within the first century, if I understand it correctly, Roman law was such that if a Roman soldier compelled you to carry his goods for a mile, you were to do that. And that's what part of the contrast is here, because Jesus is saying, don't simply do what you're required to do by those oppressive Roman soldiers. Instead, whoever asks you to go a mile, you go beyond that. Christians are to serve a broader range of people than simply those that have authority over them, those Roman soldiers that were had the power to be able to compel them. Go over to Mark chapter 9 with me for a moment. And we might remember Jesus' words in Mark chapter 9, which expand the focus of our service to others. And I think I have, I forgot to put a dash here, but let's put verse 35. Verse 35 of Mark chapter 9. And let's notice the wording here. And he said, and he sat down, called the 12 and said to them, "If anyone desires to be first, he shall be the last of all and servant of all." Then he took a little child and set him in the midst of them. And when he had taken him in his arms, he said, "Whoever receives one of these little children in my name receives me, and whoever receives me receives not me, but him who sent me." Think about that statement there, particularly in verse 35. That if we're to be a disciple of Jesus Christ, we make ourselves a servant of all. And I think that's a contrast that we see here, because it's not just that we follow what the law says. It's not simply that we do what we're forced to do, but we in freedom and in liberty exceed that. We go even beyond that to serve not just those that we're obligated to serve. We serve those that we have no obligation to serve. Notice further, we might see the idea here that rather than it simply being that we serve the one that compels us, as a disciple of Christ, we are going for God, in other words. We are making this effort. We are taking this action. We are offering this service as a recognition that we serve God. And that's a realization that we recognize that we have a master beyond simply the one that might try to compel us to do something. Over in Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3 and in verse 23. Remember the Apostle Paul's words there as we look at our life in a different way. Or he says there, "In whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men." Put yourself in the first century and think about that situation. Jesus is saying, when that Roman soldier compels you to carry his load for a mile, you're not doing it just for the Roman soldier. You are doing it as if you are serving the Lord. And so you go that mile, but then you keep going. Imagine what a shocking kind of thing that must have been to the hardened Roman soldier that felt as if he was taking advantage of the person by forcing them to carry his load for a mile, and then you just keep going for another mile. But notice further, it is the idea of going with him too, rather than resisting. You're not going to arch your back and bow your neck and suggest, "No, you're not going to take advantage of me." Instead, it is a willing submission. It is something in which, you know, think about this. If you went one, that would be an inconvenience. But going two is twice the inconvenience. Going twice as far. And yet it is something that Jesus calls upon his disciples to do willingly. Over in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, I'd like us to notice in a different context there, here in the context of the giving for the saints. In 2 Corinthians chapter 8, beginning in verse 1, I want us to notice the attitude that the Apostle Paul praises here among the brethren in terms of their generosity and their willingness to give beyond what was simply expected of them. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, beginning in verse 1. "Moreover, brethren, I make known to you the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia, that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded in the riches of their liberality. For I bear you witness that according to their ability, yes, and beyond their ability, they were freely willing, imploring us with much urgency that we would receive the gift and the fellowship of the ministering to the saints, and not only as we had hoped, but they first gave themselves to the Lord and then to us by the will of God. Think about that attitude that's demonstrated there. You don't see in the spirit of the brethren in the churches in Macedonia here an attitude that says, I've got to give. Yeah, I'm being forced to do this. I'm being compelled. They're going the second mile. In the sense that they're saying, all right, we have an opportunity to give. Even notice in their poverty, it abounded to great liberality. Here's an instance in which we ought to be liberal. We ought to be generous. We ought to have that attitude that we're going to go beyond simply what we are forced to do, beyond what we're expected to do because we are serving the Lord. Let's think a little bit about some things that are characteristic of what it means as disciples of Christ if we are going to travel that second mile. It means that we're going to exhibit a unique kind of nature that's going to be shocking to the world around us. They won't understand it. They won't expect it. It will be an attitude that demonstrates helpfulness. However, it's an attitude that also demonstrates some freedom. Think about this. The Roman soldier that thought, I'm forcing you, but then sees that in your freedom, you do more than you were asked, recognizes, I'm not forcing that person to do anything. They are freely giving, and so it is with us. You know, we might be a little resistant to some of these teachings that we see in Matthew chapter 5, because we might be inclined to think, if I do that, I'm going to be taken advantage of. Let's change our perspective on that. Because let's realize that Jesus is, in essence, saying that when these circumstances happen, that you've been mistreated, or you're being forced to do something that wouldn't be your choice initially, and yet you respond in a way that's not resistant, you respond in a way that's not rebelling against it, but you give in freely to that, you are demonstrating they're not forcing you to do anything. You're demonstrating your freedom, but also your love for those around you. Because it puts us in a situation where we can allow our service to them to be a reflection of the God that we serve, the Lord that we are a servant to. It provides more than what was expected. But also it creates a new mindset within Christians. It helps us learn not to count the small troubles of life as a burden, but instead to see those things as a glorious opportunity in which we can serve our Lord, in which we can influence others, in which sometimes we can change attitudes and change the world around us, as we will see a little bit later. We'll go back to Matthew chapter 5, and I want us to notice some things that Jesus specifically kind of zeroes in on here as we look at this passage once again in Matthew chapter 5. And let's go first of all in verse 44. Because I want us to notice that here Jesus shows us what we could call kind of a second mile mindset. We go the second mile in prayer. Notice the wording that he gives here in verse 44. We're to pray for those who mistreat us. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. What does the world do? What do we do if we are not seeking to follow the example of Christ? Well, we may gossip to someone about, you wouldn't believe what they did to me. We may resist or we may lash back. But notice, Jesus says here, pray for them. And that changes some things, doesn't it? It changes our perspective on the person. It changes our perspective on ourselves and the situation. It changes our perspective really upon the whole nature of what's going on. Really, when someone mistreats us, I told some of the young people at our study last week, what you really need to do is pity that person, because why is it that they think it is all right to act in ways that are improper? Pity that leads to prayer. It may have a result of trying to change the attitude and the behavior. But notice as well, we go the second mile by putting ourselves in God's steps. And what I mean by that is not acting as if we're God, but I mean following the kind of attitude that God demonstrates. Notice verse 45. That you may be sons of your Father in heaven, for he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. Are we not grateful that God has continued to be generous to us? God has, in essence, gone the second mile with us, even when we didn't deserve it. When we shamed Him. When we rebelled against Him. So, if we think about it, if we're put in an opportunity in a situation of which someone has mistreated us or someone is trying to force something upon us that wouldn't have been our choice, and we submit, we respond freely in a way that's generous, that's kind, who are we acting like? We're acting like our God in heaven. But notice, we go the second mile as well in love, verse 46. And if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax collectors do the same. It's pretty easy, isn't it, to love those that love us, love those that are lovable. It's much, much more challenging when people treat us in a way that is not loving, that doesn't make us want to just respond with the same kind of attitude. But really, if we think about what God does, we think about that sense in which there's some problem that leads them to act that way, we really need to recognize that those are the people we need to love the most because they are not acting as they ought to. And the way in which we can change that is by responding in just the way that Jesus talks about. But then finally, notice we can go the second mile in kindness. Verse 47, this unusual wording here, and if you greet your brethren only, what do you do more than others? Do not even tax collectors do the same. Do we just say hello to those people that are friendly to us? Or do we put ourselves in a situation where maybe we don't know that person? Maybe they've been unkind to us. But we try to tear down any of those defenses. We try to tear down any of that tension. And we go the second mile in terms of kindness. What a remarkable attitude is demonstrated here. And as I mentioned a few moments ago, I think it calls upon us to realize the great power that rests in this attitude of going the second mile. You may say, power? What do you mean power? What's powerful about being forced to do something? What's powerful about turning your cheek when somebody has mistreated you? Well, it's powerful because one person with a second mile mindset can often change the surroundings for the better. Notice with me two examples of this that I think somewhat illustrate it. Let's look first of all in Acts chapter 9. Acts chapter 9. Someone we know very little about, but I want you to notice what we do know about them speaks to their attitude, speaks to the influence they had on others, speaks to the spirit of servitude that they demonstrated towards others. Read with me Acts chapter 9, verse 36 through 43. At Joppa, there was a certain disciple named Tabitha, which is translated Dorcas. This woman was full of good works and charitable deeds, which she did. But it happened in those days that she became sick and died. When they had washed her, they laid her in an upper room. And since Lydda was near Joppa and the disciples had heard that Peter was there, they sent two men to him, imploring him not to delay in coming to them. And Peter arose and went with them. When he had come, they brought him to the upper room. And all the widows stood by him weeping, showing him, notice, the tunics and garments which Dorcas had made while she was with them. But Peter put them all out and knelt down and prayed. And turning to the body, he said, Tabitha, arise. And she opened her eyes. And when she saw Peter, she sat up. And he gave her his hand and lifted her up. And when she had called the saints and widows, he presented her alive. And it became known throughout all Joppa. And many believed on the Lord. So it was that he stayed many days in Joppa with Simon, a tanner. Now, again, we don't know much about this woman, do we? It's interesting. Have you ever been to funerals? And, you know, there are some funerals you'll go to, and you will hear all of the things that the person that had passed away did and the mark that they made upon the lives of those around them. And then you go to other funerals, and it's almost as if they're trying to just scrape up something to remember what that person even stood for. You know, as we think about here, Dorcas, there wasn't any having to scramble around to figure out how she had served others, was there? As soon as Peter comes in, they are showing, look at the things that she did. Look at how she served others. I think that's the second mile mindset. But notice as well, look over in a different context in Philippians chapter 1. Because here I want us to notice the Apostle Paul in a circumstance that many of us might look at, just like these Matthew chapter 5 instances, and think, well, that's repression. That's choking someone's power and rights and ability. But look at what Paul says about how his circumstances, in which, being a prisoner at the time, he writes this epistle, had proven to offer opportunities he couldn't have imagined. Philippians chapter 1, beginning in verse 12. But I want you to know, brethren, that the things which happened to me have actually turned out for the furtherance of the gospel, so that it has become evident to the whole palace guard and to all the rest that my chains are in Christ. And most of the brethren in the Lord, having become confident by my chains, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. Do we think about the kind of impact that our attitude can have upon the one mistreating us? Do we think about the kind of impact that our response to mistreatment can have upon those that see our response and see how we act? We must ask, and we must commit ourselves in our life to say, well, I'm going to go the second mile in many aspects. I'm going to go the second mile in my home. What are those ways in which I can go beyond what I was asked to serve my family? Or in the workplace, what are those ways in which I can demonstrate to my coworkers and my employer that I am going the extra mile? Or in the church, what are those ways that I can have that second mile attitude and second mile mindset? I want us to end by simply just offering kind of a few thoughts, and you could fill in the blanks for this yourself, but what are some ways that we can go the second mile? We may do so perhaps by sharing a meal or an activity with someone new. Not just the ones that you always spend time with. Remember, if you love those that love you, that's nothing unusual. But instead, with someone new, someone that maybe is lonely, someone that doesn't have family, someone that doesn't have friends, someone that you haven't talked to before or spent time with, help someone without being asked. Volunteer to help with some new work that the church is involved with, or some new work that needs to be done. Host or teach a home Bible study. You know, it's not just something that elders and deacons have to do. Instead, take the initiative. Allow it to be something that you get started. Ask a new member to work with you on some effort, either going to a gospel meeting, or maybe there's someone that you're trying to study with. Involve them in that. Invite someone to worship or to study the Bible with you. And you think about it, there are many ways that you could fill in the blanks to this as well, but going the second mile. Maybe that there are those here this morning that have never been obedient to the gospel of Jesus Christ. We have a God in heaven that I think beyond any question we can recognize went the second mile in caring for us when we were unloving, when we were unworthy of that. In our sin, God the Father sent God the Son to die upon the cross for our sin. Would you not put your faith in Jesus as the Son of God? Confess that faith before men. Repent of sin that separates you from God. And be baptized into Christ for the remission of sins. If as a child of God, maybe you haven't really gone that second mile in your life in service to the Lord. Maybe it's been too much a matter of I'm looking out for me. And in that process, you've allowed yourself to get entangled in sin. As your brothers and sisters, we would love to go to God in prayer on your behalf. And if we can help you, won't you come while we stand and sing?